Radio Split Ranch.
Hello and welcome once again to Radio Split Ranch, a monthly visit with the Capital Region's great broadcasters of the past and sometimes present. I'm Warren Garling when I'm not on the radio. And that's why in the following conversation, you're going to hear my guest call me by my air name, Chris Warren, at least once, since we met professionally first and then became friends. This guest also interviewed me on TV a few years back based on a passage from my first memoir, I'll Have to Ask My Mom. Here comes the plug. Available for a new low price through Amazon.com, and there's also an audio version on Audible.com. You may recognize this guy's voice from his days doing radio news and maybe even put a face to the voice if you remember him from his stints in two local TV newsrooms. Of all the guests I've had in almost 3 years at the Radio Split Ranch, this guy should get an award for best name dropping. I know you're going to enjoy getting to know John Craig. Now, John, you know there's no video here today. It's just audio.
Audio. What? No
so,
camera?
So all those tapes you just brought, I can't put these on the podcast. Sorry.
Well, all right, pack them up.
But I want to tell you, I enjoyed the little bit that we worked together while we were both in the same building at WGY years ago. I really got a kick out of how serious you can be on the microphone doing news, and then how much fun you could be off the microphone and still keep it clean, which was pretty cool. You know, I thought that was pretty neat.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you for having me in your in this palatial studio.
Yeah, right. The Radio Split Ranch.
That's right. I love the Split Ranch. But no, it's, radio, actually, radio is one of my first loves. I mean, when I was in high school, we had a 10 watt radio station.
Did you?
And which was rare, obviously. Yeah. High schools didn't have.
Right.
And yeah, we had a 10 watt radio station. And I always thought the first thing I ever wanted to do was do radio play by play.
Wow.
And, I always thought telling stories either visually with television or audio, or if you have that person that you're interviewing telling their story and you hear, yes, you can manipulate all that stuff. And of course, we see it time and time again these days, but you try not to have that happen.
Right.
I'd rather have the person tell the story in first person.
Sure.
Because, even print, sometimes you can read it differently.
That's true.
You know, a printed word, an email even, you read differently than if it was spoken to you.
Yeah.
So, but radio was something that was always, I was one of the kids that snuck a radio into when I was in elementary school to listen to the World Series.
The World Series, yep.
I bought one of those flat speakers that you could plug into your transistor and stick under your pillow.
Wow.
So you could listen to some of the radio play-by-play way back when.
Sure. Great stuff. So, yeah, you mentioned high school. Where did you grow up? Where did you start?
Grew up in North Jersey. Okay. I grew up in a town called Wyckoff, New Jersey, which is about 20 minutes outside the city.
Okay.
My dad worked in the city, and we were in the suburbs.
Well, then you listened to the number one radio market in the country.
I sure did. I long before anybody cared or wanted to listen to Imus in the Morning, I would listen to him while everybody else was listening to WPLJ and WNEWFM and all those. I'd eventually come around to that. But Imus was – I aspired to maybe, I wanted to do updates on his show someday. And this is, of course, long before any of his controversy. He was the pillar in my mind. If you picked one or the other, it was Imus or Stern. I went with Imus.
Yeah.
But I grew up in the number one, knowing full well that if I wanted to be in this business, I couldn't go to the number one market. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go to a small market or a medium sized market.
Sure.
And work your way up.
Yeah.
It's different these days. You can stay where you are and do a podcast or do whatever you want.
My first job out of college was up in Saratoga Springs, WKAJ.
Right.
And for a while, I did morning news, and the first newscast wasn't until 7. So right around 6 o'clock, I'm coming out of the police headquarters where I've looked at the overnight reports and all that stuff, trying to see if anything happened that I could write up for news. And I would listen to WNBC to Imus.
That's right.
And so I'd listen to him before I'd hit the station and had to go in and do my own thing.
Yeah. The 50,000 clear channel of WNBC.
Yeah.
I was an intern in college. I graduated from high school in North Jersey, and I went to James Madison University in the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia.
Ah.
And part of that, of getting the communication broadcasting degree, where you had internships. And I had an internship at NBC, the building, 30 Rock.
Wow.
2 days a week. And they'd allow you to go around and or take the tour and so on. And there's the icons of broadcasting there. And
sure.
I actually wound up meeting Imus a long time later when I worked at CNBC. He was a guest on one of the shows that I was working on. Wow. And I was so nervous to meet him.
Sure.
I had read his book and several books and went in. And you're not supposed, you work for those places. You're not supposed to ask for autographs and so on.
Sure.
This is long before any cell phones, so you can't take pictures. But I have a signed book of God's Other Son.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Don Imus and what was the now it's blanking.
I can't remember the other one.
Billy Saul Hargis.
Oh, yes.
Great
yes.
Billy Saul Hargis.
Yeah.
His, the, if anybody remembers that, then you're way too old to be listening.
So what years are we talking about then? When did you, when were you in college?
I graduated high school 87, college 87 to 91.
Okay.
And I actually thought I would go to JMU for a couple years and maybe transfer and see where it led me. They had a public radio station that I wound up doing something for WMRA because most higher education had a public radio station. Not a lot of them had a real, their own student-run radio station. But so I went there and I would do my radio mentor at the time. He was running the place and he saw that I had an interest.
Mm-hmm.
So he made me get up at 5:30 in the morning to come in and do a 5-minute sports update at 7:55. But he made me come in that early and write and rewrite the copy and rewrite it again.
Yeah.
It didn't do me very much good when I got to my 8:00 psych class, psych 101, and fell asleep because they put you in one of those 100 seat rooms. Drop the lights, and then you're out.
Exactly. Well, at least you went to psych class. I skipped that and went to the radio station, college radio station.
Well, no, so I went, and I think I wound up with a 3-hour D in there, but that was...
Exactly.
But he taught me a lot about writing copy, rewriting copy. I had to, as part of it, and I knew nothing about that area, Harrisonburg, Virginia, but I would have to call the high school coaches in football season and do a high school football ranking and those kinds of things.
Wow.
All those things, just as sort of, repetition. It's like if you're trying out for a sports team, you have to run the drills. This was what he made me do.
Good.
One time you talk about my humor and so on. I was doing sports and I started laughing. I was doing the sports and there was another woman doing the news. And the rookie of the year for NASCAR at the time was Dick Trickle.
Oh,
and,
boy.
Yeah. That one, I did not pre-read that. And that name, next thing you know, the two of us are just falling off the chair. And it was over because this was a very staid, public station that the older people are listening to and blah, blah. And we get off the air and he lit us up one side and down the other because of Dick Trickle.
Oh, God. But you know what? There was a time in radio, especially when I first got into it, where you could have some fun like that and be completely silly and try to make the other guy break up while he's reading the newscast and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And for some reason, we got away with it. I don't know where the bosses were when this was happening.
That's right.
But we seemed to get away with it in 9 times out of 10.
Some were listening, some were not.
Yeah, apparently. You go. Yeah. And then, of course, the 10th time was when you really thought, well, I'm out of this job.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And the great thing about my friend Ken, he's been my friend. He was a self-described mentor, but he is really a mentor for this business. He went on to move to Kansas and so on, but we still keep in touch.
Nice.
He still refers him to himself that, and I refer to him as that too, because he really put it in me that if you're going to do this, you got to do it right.
Yeah. No, that's good. So what happens from there?
Well, so I got internships at CNBC during the time when nobody knew what CNBC was, and it was actually called the Consumer News and Business Channel. That's what the letters stood for at the time.
Hmm.
And they were going up against FNN, Mm-hmm. And so, but I wanted to, so I wanted to do some kind of television writing. I had always been, I had been a writer first. I had done, when I was in high school, I covered our sports teams, whether it be basketball, football, fencing, soccer, you name it. So I wanted to be, I figured if you could be a writer first, then you could do anything you wanted.
Sure. So that was for the school newspaper?
For the, yeah, well, actually, and it was for the local weekly. Too. Oh, there you go. Kind of like a penny saver type of thing.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So first I did that. I did it for that. But I, yeah, I was also the sports editor and the editor of the school paper.
Cool.
So I was always a writer first. And then I did radio. And then the television got me to the internships at CNBC. And I worked at the assignment desk, and they would send me out with photographers to pretty much be a field producer.
Okay.
And you would gather the news and so on. One time I was an intern for Steals and Deals, which was a show, self-explanatory.
Mm-hmm.
But I would go out, and one time I interviewed the Madagascar hissing cockroach. And I didn't even know what that was, but I'm holding the microphone and you kind of poke it with a pencil because, and it literally would hiss. And you'd need to get the gnat sound of
that.
Yeah. You know, and then you'd take, you learn all the TV tricks where then you take the mic out and then take another shot of the cockroach and then they put the audio in and all that just because you can't do it any other way, really.
Yeah.
And one time I was, they sent me up actually to Watkins Glen. I wore a tie. I was all, you know, I'm a high school, I'm a college kid, but I go up to the races because somebody had heard that they had reconditioned Pintos. So they took the Pinto, of course,
sure.
From, I'm sure your listeners will know, but yeah. If they don't know, used to blow up when they got rear-ended because that's where they put the gas tank. Well, they obviously took all those out. They put in a standard racing fuel cell, and it became this. It's like a stock car.
Wow.
Kind of like going out to New Lebanon or somewhere. Sure. And so they sent us up to Watkins Glen on a Saturday morning, and I went with a photographer, and I did all these interviews and so on, and cut my own demo reel from some of that. And that got me, you know, my college credit and helped to earn or was put on one of my early tapes because it was shot better than anything we shot in college to try and get a job after college.
There you go.
But it became so. One time I was on the city streets of New York. I don't remember what the topic was, but next thing I know, some guy comes up to me and he thought I was really on television, and he's dropping trowel to show me. He's like, just look at this. Put this on the news. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. What's happening? And the photographer's laughing his head off. And
only so, in New York City.
That's right.
Yep.
And all these, and I'm just this wet behind the ear kid from the suburbs of New Jersey going, what have I gotten myself into?
Exactly. So CNBC. Now, this was pretty early days then, obviously.
It really was, They were based in Fort Lee, New Jersey.
Okay.
And matter of fact, I had applied for internships at CNBC and WFAN at the same time, which ironically turned out to be where Imus was.
Yeah,
he was the morning guy.
Yeah.
And I went and interviewed at both places. And the difference was, and I really wanted to do sports. I really thought that someday I was going to be Brent Musburger or Bob Costas.
Good for you.
Or, you know, Jim Nance, whatever, someday. And I really, that's what I wanted to do. And so I go in, I do the interview, and they offered, and maybe I should have done it. I don't know. Hindsight's great. But WFAN wanted you 4 days a week, including one overnight shift, and you would produce for whoever the talent was.
Sure.
And I didn't know anything about producing, but I'm sure you'd learn quickly.
Learn.
Yeah, you learn by doing. But I had to cross two bridges, I think, to get there at the time.
Oh, gosh.
pay for your own parking, bring your own food. They weren't going to do any of that. You were going to get the college credit, but they weren't going to pay you a dime. They weren't even going to pay you gas money.
Oh, boy.
And I quickly did the math. and then CNBC was in Fort Lee, which is about 20 minutes right before the bridge.
There you go.
And I was started off with, I think it was, they let me come, actually, they let me come 4 days a week.
Okay.
That had built off of my 2 days a week when I used to ride the bus into 230 Rock. And I thought, I always heard that if you get in at NBC, you're going to have that could be something.
Yeah.
And so I sort of weighed the pros and cons back and forth, and I'm going, I don't know about this. I'd really kind of like the WFAN thing because, you know, I'm
more really sports like, oriented.
Yeah. And then I thought, well, if I can do this other, maybe I could. So in the end, I chose CNBC, and within a couple of years, it went from I did back-to-back internships my junior and senior year, going into that.
Nice.
And that led eventually to coming back. I graduated in 91. I kind of farted around that summer because I thought, oh, this is going to be good. I'm going to have job offers left and right. This will be great. And it didn't. And sometime in the spring of 92, there was an opening to work primetime. So I worked for the Dick Cavett Show.
Did you really?
Yes.
Wow.
I worked for Dick Cavett, one of the icons of this business.
Absolutely. He is the only person I ever wrote to a network about.
Is that right?
Because ABC had him on mornings for a while back in the mid-60s, late 60s, and they took him off. And he wasn't on TV for a while. Then he got the late night thing. And I was so ticked off they took him off. It must have been during the summer when I'm watching. I mean, I'm still in school. I'm in high school at the time. And it's the only time I wrote a letter of complaint to a network. And it was because they took Dick Cavett off the air.
Well, he is one of the smartest, funniest, just all around. I mean, he wrote for Carson. He wrote for Jack Parr. And he wrote for Carson briefly before he went off. And they offered him his own primetime late night show.
Yeah.
And he couldn't have been nicer. He was so terrific.
Wow.
And he would come in once a week and tape two shows. And during the rest of the week, I would work on helping to either write some research for him, book the guests to come in. I told Christopher Reeve that he was getting picked up in a black limo, and it was a white limo.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and he was not happy with me when he showed up in a white limo, and I turned ashen white, and he gets out of it, and he's like, who booked this car? I'm like, sorry, Mr. Reeve. But I got to meet a lot of really great people. I met Steve Allen.
Wow, me too. I sat and interviewed him for a few minutes.
Is that right?
Yes, over lunch one time. Yeah.
He loves himself from Steve Allen, by the way.
Yeah. He's
very nice, though. Very nice guy. Yeah.
But he also was very exacting.
Yes.
And so occasionally I'd ask him a question, and he'd said, well, your question assumes such and such. Right. And I go, oh, God, this is going to be interesting. And so he did that to me a couple of times. I think I still have the interview somewhere.
I read Bigger Than a Bread Box a number of years ago. Yeah. And you repeated a lot of the routines that you did completely ad-libbing commercials and such, or at least getting away from the 30 seconds that was written for you. Mm-hmm. Is this something that's always come natural to you?
Yes, I'm still a little surprised that the world pays me to do what I always did anyway, you know, in school and in the home and among my friends. I think among those professional comedians who are true natural comedians, as distinguished from somebody with 400 great jokes and a tux, you do find, if you look into their life histories, that their funniness emerged in their childhood. They didn't suddenly get to be 33 and say, I think I'll become a comedian. They found out usually when they were about 12 that they were funny. Yeah.
He was a hero of mine from the moment I read his book, Bigger Than a Bread Box, which was all about his early radio days. Yeah.
No, and I went down the list. I mean, and occasionally I would get to pitch a story or a guest idea. Like one time I said, well, you know, the senior PGA is coming. We could get Lee Trevino, and we booked Lee Trevino. Mm. I said we could try Tommy Lasorda, and we all went out to Shea Stadium at the time, and I helped to field produce that piece with Tommy Lasorda.
Wow.
Dick went on the road a couple times to go to went to St. Louis, and they were like, well, who can we get in St. Louis? Mm. I said, well, there's this guy. He's a broadcaster. People might know him as Dan Dierdorf.
Oh, God.
But I don't know if the average person is going to know who he is, but he does do, I think at the time he was doing Monday Night Football, or he was doing weekends, and they booked him. So
how about that? Which incarnation of the Dick Cavett Show was this?
This was his primetime show, probably 90, early 90s, so 92, 93, 94, that era.
Okay, now on the PBS show, or
this was after
syndicated?
This was syndicated. Okay. Well, it was on CNBC. CNBC during the day CNBC during the day was financial news.
Yeah.
And then they needed prime time. They needed some things to fill those hours.
Wow.
And they came up with a number of ideas, Dick being one of them, because they thought, well, that demographic certainly translates.
Yes.
People that would watch financial news would know who he is, and the guests he would have.
Yeah.
So we would have a Dick Cavett show. They had a couple of talk shows. They did an issue-oriented show, like a Washington kind of thing. But so the Dick Cavett Show was one of them. And then we had a show called Posner and Donahue, Vladimir Posner and Phil Donahue. Phil, obviously an icon.
Sure.
And Vladimir was sort of the Phil version in Russia.
Yeah.
And he came on Phil's regular talk show a couple of times, and they struck it up, a nice friendship. And they created this Public of Current Affairs show. And I got to help screen calls for that.
Wow, wow.
And then that also led to Geraldo Rivera. And he, after his daytime show, which, of course, led to the chair and the breaking of the nose and the whole thing, he sort of, and the Al Capone's vault.
Yes.
Which I remember watching with my father and my uncle in Florida the night it aired.
I'll be darned.
And we watched, we were riveted, watched the whole thing.
Oh, sure. I remember watching it, yeah.
So all of that happens, and, you know, I was a kid, but I'm thinking, next thing I know, he wanted to reinvent himself with a current public affairs type show.
Wow.
Sort of like a Larry King type of show.
Gotcha.
But he wanted to do with issues. And he comes to CNBC. So they had all this primetime lineup
nice.
That would air, you know, Dick was about a half hour show. I think it would air at 8 to 8:30. Then they had another Washington type of show from 8:30 to 9. And then they do 9 to 10. They eventually would hire Tom Snyder and some others. So they had this whole, it was CNBC primetime. I still have a sweatshirt. I thought, boy, I was really going to make it at the network level, and I'd never have to go to a small market.
There you go.
You know, I did it for a while, and Geraldo was nice. He was terrific. Not at all. You think the parody of himself that maybe. But he had certainly built his journalism chops on Willowbrook.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I mean, he was a serious newsman in New York City for a long time.
Sure was.
Absolutely. And he cut his teeth, you know, in the right place. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, for me, as a young kid in my early 20s, to work for Dick Cavett, Phil Donahue, Vladimir Posner, and Geraldo Rivera, I thought, okay, I'm getting somewhere.
You're on your way.
I'd hope so.
So what happened?
What happened? Let's see. I wanted to be on air. So I really thought, okay, I could stay here and be a producer and build a nice career, but I wanted to be on air. I wanted to see what that would do. I wanted to see if I could do it. And I started sending out tapes and applying. And about this time, yeah, it was around President's Weekend, long weekend. I took a few days in 1994 and went down because I'd gone to school in Virginia and I kept in touch with my friends. And I went and crashed on their couch and I went to three stations in Richmond. And I went even to back to the station in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And I thought, well, I've got to start a small market. Because one of the things I did too, I volunteered on all these CNBC shows. And Tom Snyder one night, who was based in L.A., had Dan Rather on.
Mm-hmm.
But Dan Rather's in New York. So I stayed to kind of be his escort up to the studio. And,
all right.
And I'm like, Mr. Rather, can I talk to you for a minute? and I said, hey, I really kind of want to do the news or sports or something. He says, well, you have to go to a small market.
Yeah.
Because at the time, in the early 90s, you still had to do that.
You do. Yeah.
You really did. I mean, he did it. Everybody did. I mean, sure. I read his books, all those things. So
now I have to tell you again that he's one of my heroes.
There you go.
Dan Rather. I mean,
the
so
camera
far,
never blinks.
You're naming all these heroes that I had over the years, but absolutely. I mean, and to this day, he's my hero. I subscribe to his podcast or his email that he does all the time, Steady. Yeah. And because he's just got just such a, you know, I mean, he's always been on target as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's,
I mean,
he's
one of the great clips, right?
Consummate.
One of the great clips, isn't it, when he stood up to ask Nixon a question and they all applaud.
Yeah.
And Nixon says to him, are you running for something? And he pauses and he says, no, sir, are you?
Yes.
I mean, that, boy, that took some.
Whoa. It did. Some cojones.
Yeah, sure did. It sure did. I was, you know, I over the moon to meet a guy like that.
Absolutely.
So he says you have to go to a small market. So I go on this trip. And one of my best friends, who I crashed on his couch about a month later, calls and he says, hey, my girlfriend is running this station in Fredericksburg, Virginia, send her a tape. And I'm like, okay. So I do. And this was a station run by a cable outlet, similar to locally now Spectrum.
Okay.
Or would have been YNN or
whatever, you know, whatever they call it this week.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the cable, if you had the cable company, and you it was really a public access station,
okay,
more or less, but they produced a half-hour newscast.
Sure.
And it had a news director, a reporter, a sportscaster, and then the anchor also did the weather.
Okay.
It aired, also, you taped the news around 5 o'clock, but it didn't air till 7:30, so it wouldn't compete with the local stations.
Sure. Makes sense.
And yeah. Fredericksburg's about a half hour. It's about 45 minutes south of D.C. and about an hour north of Richmond. So it really wasn't a market. Mm-hmm. And I knew that, but I thought, well, nothing else is coming at for me, so yeah. I got to try something.
You got to get the experience.
Right.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if it doesn't work, and actually when I left CNBC, another name that I will name drop, because I'm picking them all off the floor here, Andy Friendly. Son of Fred Friendly.
Fred Friendly. Okay, yes. I know that name, yeah.
And Andy was in charge of primetime.
I'll be darned.
He said to me, if it doesn't work out and you ever want to come back, we'd love to have you back.
Nice.
And I thought, okay, great. Turns out he went out and he wound up producing for Tom Snyder when Tom went to follow Letterman.
Okay.
And then did some other things. But still, another name that I was happy to have in my back pocket if
sure,
I ever needed it.
Sure, sure.
So I go there, and within 6-7 months, the woman who hired me, my buddy's girlfriend, left. They broke up, whatever. I become the news director. And I don't know the first thing about it.
Yeah, right.
But so I'm working 6 days a week for almost no money, living in low-income housing, just trying to put a tape together, really.
Yeah.
And I wound up there for about 2 years. That led me to, kept sending out tapes. But I had a great time. You learn everything. I mean, you just learn everything.
That's the fun part about a small market is you get usually to do a little bit of everything.
Sure.
You know, whether it be in front of the camera or behind the camera, and that can pay off in spades later on.
Yeah, I created the Week in Review because I always wondered, like, we're putting together these stories. You're wondering if anybody is watching them.
Yeah.
So at the end of the week, I had 5 or 6 decent stories, and we put them together on a Friday Week in Review show. So the Friday newscast would air at 7:30, the Week in Review would air at 8, and we would tape that early enough on a Friday because we packed up every camera, every wire, every microphone we could get our hands on, a tape deck that wasn't nailed down, put it in the truck, and we go do the high school football game of the week.
Oh, geez.
Or basketball game of the week. And I wound up being, you know, chief cook and bottle washer to help out just to run the cables. And then I was doing the sideline reporting. And then during basketball, I was the color commentator. So all these things that I was, again, just trying to build kind of resume.
Resume, sure.
Yeah. So, but I'd work at least six days a week. The news wouldn't air on the weekends. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't go shoot those festivals and you didn't shoot the, I don't know, if there was some kind of crime, if you didn't have that, you had no content Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah.
And then things kind of fell into place there. Yeah. So I left Fredericksburg and there was a job open in Kingston. Here, Kingston, New York.
Really?
RNN.
Okay.
Regional News Network.
Uh-huh.
So I drove up, and it was about 75 miles north of Wyckoff.
Uh-huh.
So I said to Mom and Dad, I may be moving back in with you. I don't know. And they were fine with it. And I got hired. So I go to, I spent some of the time in Kingston. They had a bureau in Piscataway, New Jersey, near Rutgers.
Yeah.
So that's about 55 miles south of where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
So 1 week, if they needed me to go to Kingston, I went up there and crashed on a couch. And if I needed to be in Piscataway, I would just farm out from that day. I would use my own car. They gave you camera and so on, but you're a one-man band.
Yeah.
You shot everything yourself. Yeah. But they were trying to be a local CNN,
mm-hmm.
obviously now, RNN.
And this is cable?
This is cable.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, this is cable.
Because I actually applied when they were putting a broadcast station on in Kingston.
Okay.
I actually applied, and it must have been the early 90s. I don't.
That was WTZA, right?
It may have been. I forget. The only detail I remember, well, besides not getting the gig, is that I actually took the only videotape I had of an interview half hour I did with, believe it or not, Mitch Miller.
Hey.
On the local PBS TV station.
I still have my mom's
WMHT. Do you really?
Oh yeah.
Well, I volunteered at WMHT, and every once in a while they would hire me to sub for somebody that was doing the, it was Nancy Norman was her name. Mm-hmm. 5:30 to 6:00, she did a phone interview or a phone talk show.
Oh wow.
Where people could phone in and ask the, you know, sure. people that were there, you know, questions.
Yeah.
Which hardly ever happened. You used to have to fill the half hour yourself. Okay.
Right.
I got
Who's
to
Who's calling? Please, yeah. somebody call.
I got to do like 90 seconds of news at the beginning, and then they'd break for a pre-recorded weather, and then I'd come in and do live for about 25 minutes interviewing. So it's the only tape I had, and I decided, well, they'll get an idea of my presence anyway, because it was a news position. And so I drove down to Kingston, and I didn't even get an interview. I just, you know, I dropped the tape off and said, I'm interested. And I must have heard back, obviously. I didn't get it, or maybe I never did hear back, and I wasn't surprised. But Kingston.
Yeah, I got a lot of those.
Only time I've ever been in Kingston was apply for a news job on TV, which I, you know, probably would have failed at anyway, but I gave it a shot.
There was a station. It was called WTZA.
Okay.
And the call letters referenced Tappan Zee to Albany.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah. But then somebody bought it, and actually it was, at the time, it was co-owned by Ernie Anastas.
Yeah, okay, there you go, who's involved in, you know, the radio stations up here.
Right. And used to be
was in New York City.
Main anchor in New York City for a long, long time. Yep. And of course, was the father-in-law of our friend Greg Floyd.
There you go. Okay. And I believe Tracy Egan had a connection to Ernie as well.
Well, yeah, because Tracy worked at WABC.
Exactly.
And Ernie was the main anchor there for a long time.
That's what it was.
And then he went and worked, I think he worked at Channel 9 and Channel 5. And
sure.
I met him one time in Philadelphia. I was working at RNN, and we covered the volunteerism summit.
Okay.
And I had never met Ernie, and I only watched him on television, and except now that I had this sort of pseudo connection, because I think he was bought out by somebody else for at RNN. But I got to cover the volunteerism summit in 96, run by Colin Powell.
Wow.
Where every living president was there. It was mostly, well, they were all there, and Jimmy Carter was certainly in his heyday of, you know, revitalizing homes and Habitat for Humanity and all that.
Yep.
And I went and covered this for 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
They sent us there.
Yeah.
And I actually, one morning, near the steps, the famous rocky steps of the Museum of Art, Art Museum in Philadelphia, here comes Colin Powell, and I got a one-on-one with him.
Wow.
For about 3 minutes, and it was fantastic.
Nice. Yeah.
and RNN was still mad because it was always on a two-shot. They just wanted the Mike Flagg and Colin Powell.
And they
got me in there, too.
Yeah, well.
But I can't stay all bad about RNN. They sent me to Bosnia for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Also the summer of 96. I believe that's right. Yeah, because it would have been 94. If I do my ears right here. I leave. I was CNBC from 92 to 94. And then 94 to 96, I was at Fredericksburg.
Right.
And then 96 to the fall of 97, I was at RNN.
Okay.
So they sent us there to, we were doing something around July 4th for the troops.
Mm.
We wanted to interview local troops from the Hudson Valley and do a show coordinating their families back in Kingston and the people that are in Camp Tuzla, Camp Eagle in Bosnia.
Mm.
And it was a whirlwind experience,
sure.
for sure. It was amazing. So I went there for 2 weeks, and they had a fast track. I didn't have a passport. They had to fast track my passport. And then we're worried, my parents are worried, do you have to have the right inoculations? Do you have to have all
True.
This? And I'm like, I don't know.
Boy.
And we walked through war-torn Sarajevo and got to meet all kinds of people. And so, again, I was, as a young kid in his mid-20s, it was amazing. And I'm like, I just interviewed and followed the Oliver North running for governor in Virginia, and now look at me, I'm over here in Tuzla, Bosnia.
Getting international experience.
Yeah, getting stopped by the Serbs, and luckily, nothing ever bad happened, knock on wood. I got home safely. And matter of fact, came home, my buddies picked me up. We go to the Yankee game that night. I fell asleep in upper deck somewhere, and it was the only thing that happened. I think they set a beer on my head or something, and I woke up when the fireworks went off. So, whoever scheduled this trip must have talked to the satellite people, and they didn't understand that it wasn't Tuzla, Bosnia. I think they thought they said Tulsa, Oklahoma, just the first word, Tulsa versus Tuzla.
Tuzla. Oh.
So there was no satellite truck to be had.
Oh, gosh.
So we had all these soldiers gathered in camp there, and we told them we're going to do this live satellite hookup, and now there's no satellite truck. And what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And so we're trying to think on our feet, and I had this old phone card. Or they'd given me a phone card, rather. Cable and Wireless, if you remember that old company.
Okay.
It didn't have international rates, so it didn't work. But I happened to have in my pocket my AT&T phone card, which was, of course, tied to my parents' account. Because I'm still living back at home.
Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out how we're going to do this. They had all the parents back in the studio. We had the soldiers here, and I said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to hook up a camera. We're going to dial a phone line, and they're going to talk to them as if they're making a phone call.
There you go.
And then we're in the magic of TV. A week later, we're going to put this all together.
Wow.
When we get back to Kingston.
Yeah.
And I don't know what kind of $600 plus phone bill it was, but it took me another 6 months to wrestle that money away from the owners at RNN. But I did get it back.
That's too much.
And then in that time, with all that tape, I applied and went for and got a job in Utica, New York.
Okay.
TV.
Yeah.
It was owned by a station. Actually, the owners were out of Seattle, but they owned a bunch of stations. And one of the stations they owned was in Syracuse. And Syracuse bought this little station in Utica, primarily as sort of a, you had an office. The office in Utica would have been where your one reporter would be.
Okay.
So, but a
bureau or something.
A bureau. There's Is that the one you're looking That's for? The word I couldn't think of. Way to go. You're a real broadcaster, John. Good job. A bureau. But Syracuse had its own station. And what they would do is they would feed some content to that station in Utica, mm-hmm. WTR, which is actually on a UHF signal, not a VHF signal.
Ah, okay.
The VHF signal was WKTV. They were the
that
superpower.
That was Channel 2, wasn't
yes,
it?
Channel yes, Channel 2.
Yep.
Yeah, and they're the superpower.
Yeah.
And they're the NBC, and right. UTR was the ABC. But what they would do news-wise was Syracuse would gather your money segment and your health segment and a couple other, regular news segments you would see, but they would be fronted by the anchors in Syracuse to take the burden off of the small market that was UTR. Yeah, so sure. We could concentrate on doing a few little local stories and interviewing, the mayor once a week, whatever it was. Anyway, they flew me out to Syracuse, drove me to Utica. I liked it well enough. I wound up renting a house for $500 a month. Not too bad. And I worked there for, as I like to say, 2 years, 2 months, 2 weeks, 2 hours, 2 days, too long, till the end of 99, when they strung me along at the beginning of November and said, oh, yeah, we're going to extend your contract. And then by middle of November, I couldn't find anybody to talk to, and they decided they weren't going to.
Yeah.
But they had hired me as the anchor and the managing editor.
Wow.
Which was great. So I was getting essentially two salaries of $20,000 each, Chris.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's.
I just called you Chris, by the way. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. That happens. Everybody understands that. I've had whole interviews where people have called me Chris because that's the only name they know me by.
I don't know.
That's
Warren. I know that.
Yeah, that's okay.
When I first met you, I didn't know that.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, that's right.
Nope. No. So then the UTR that dried up, and I wound up going to Lansing, Michigan. There was a station out there. I'll spare you the details. There was a woman involved. She's my girlfriend at the time. Whatever.
Yeah.
Long and the short of it, I go out to worked in Lansing, Michigan for about 6 months. And in that time, there was a job offer opening, and I sent a tape to WTEN here.
Yeah.
And they flew me out. I did a whirlwind day. I flew back to Detroit. Because that's where you flew in and out of.
Sure.
You know, Detroit to Albany, that was the flight. And within a few days, they had offered me a position.
Nice.
It was going to be early mornings. The Channel 10 wanted to start an early morning show with a reporter. Imagine that, 20-plus years ago.
Yeah.
Which they didn't really have. But they liked what I did, and they turned it into, okay, we're going to have you be one of the main evening reporters.
Cool.
So I worked, I was Monday to Friday, 3 to midnight.
Wow.
To start. And then you jump around there a little bit. I was there for.
Now, who are the anchors there when you were at 10?
Elisa Streeter and Terry McSweeney had just started.
Okay.
So he and I came in about the same time. He's from San Francisco. He's now back there and doing great things.
Mm-hmm.
But Elisa was there. Tracy Egan, of course, and John McLaughlin did the 5 o'clock news.
There you go.
Together.
Sure.
And I learned so much from John and Tracy. I mean, I didn't want to insult Tracy, but I did grow up watching her on Channel 7 in New York.
Uh-huh.
And I think she appreciated it because, you know, I cared. Some kids come in and you know, I even look nowadays, you know, they just want to be on television.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sizzle, no steak.
Exactly.
But I always wanted to be a journalist first, whether it be doing sports, writing, whatever, news. I knew I could get more. There were more jobs in news than there were in sports, but I always knew that came first, and I think they understood that. I learned a lot from McLaughlin. We sat across from each other, and he knew that I was not some fly by night guy.
Good.
Elisa was terrific. Terry was terrific. I sat next to Dan Murphy, who did the sports, and John Spadafora was number two, and I was. Because I knew a little about sports, I became the de facto number three.
Sure, sure. When everybody else is home enjoying the holiday weekend.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, I wasn't married or had kids, so
well,
I could...
Well, you fit right in there.
That's right.
They could use you, yeah.
And I was 2 hours away from home. So the few things,
you'd moved up here.
I moved here in July of 2000.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, that was the time.
But what you're saying is if, you know, since it was 2 hours away, you could still get there, you know, to be with the family, but maybe not on the holiday.
Right. And they wanted me to they had me anchor Christmas morning, which I didn't really want to do, but sure. I'm low man on the totem pole. So I did it. So but they gave me Christmas Eve off, and they gave me the 26th off.
Nice.
So I drove down on Christmas Eve, still met, saw some of my friends.
Sure.
Drove back, got a few hours sleep, anchored the morning show, reported, got back in the car, drove back down to New Jersey in the afternoon of the 25th, stayed the 26th, came back up on the 26th, and that's how you did it.
This is the glamour of medium market to small market radio and TV, folks. This is it.
There's no doubt about it. And I look back at it sometimes and I go, should I have ever left CNBC?
Yeah.
So I was there at Channel 10 for 7.5 years, and then the owners, Young Broadcasting, wanted to sell their stations.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to go lean and mean.
Mm-hmm.
So that within, it was the end of 07, they brought in somebody to cut corners or cut staff.
Oh, sure, sure.
And apparently, from what I understand, they couldn't get their ducks in a row they wanted to do it between Christmas and New Year's, which would have been a beautiful Christmas present.
And you know, the majority of broadcast interests, that's exactly when they do it.
Yeah,
you know, they've got to look at the bottom line for the coming year.
Right.
A couple times I was let go, was always downsized.
Yeah.
And the first time it happened to me after 17 years full time in radio, never a hint that I'd ever get fired from it. And 12 years at that very station. It was on January 10th. January 10th. It just was going to make the books look so much better for the rest of the year.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that, to go back to when I was in Utica, and when they did that, because as I said, I was making a whopping $40,000.
There you go.
Warren, you know, it's making a lot of money.
Yeah.
So they led me along like I was going to sign a new contract. I had to go back to Syracuse that sometime between Christmas and New Year's, and I fought to the news director who hired me. Now, he wasn't privy to what I guess was going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me to the GM, and I argued with him enough, and I made my case. I said, look, I stopped looking for other jobs because you guys were going to keep me going.
There you go. Yeah.
So they paid me for a whole other month.
Wow.
And that at least allowed me to pay my rent.
At least you spoke up.
Yeah. So, yeah. Good so then you. I, yeah. And then I could go out to Michigan and wind up out there to find another job.
There you go.
So I did that for a while. But I've been lucky enough that most of them have been my moves on my own.
Yeah.
But then this doesn't happen back in WTEN. They can't get it done by the end of 07. But by the end of January of 08, you know, we saw it coming. I got a phone call earlier that day, and they said, today looks like it's today. And I go up, and it was about 3 or 4 days before the Super Bowl, which turned out to be 07 would have been the Giants-Patriots' first meeting,
yeah.
I believe,
yeah.
Super Bowl 42. I wanted to work the day shift that Sunday so I could at least watch the game because it was still prime time.
Yeah.
I didn't say I wanted the day off. I just wanted. And, of course, they come in and give you a severance, and I go, well, at least I can watch the Super Bowl
now. There you go.
and did. And so I left there, and then within a couple of weeks, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I was married now. I just wasn't sure what was next. And maybe this was the time to get out of the business and do something else. And Channel 13 called and said, hey, we're going to have somebody going on maternity leave. Do you want to fill in for 6 months?
There you go.
And I said, great, sure. Okay.
Nice, nice.
So I did that.
Transition.
Yeah. So I was, I did that. And then she comes back off maternity leave. Then my whole world took a different turn because I turned 40. I met my cardiologist on my 40th birthday who told me, come back tomorrow. We have to run some tests.
Uh-oh.
And I wind up from the day I met my cardiologist, which was on my birthday, October 20th, 2008.
Eight, yeah.
He says, we need you in the hospital. I had quadruple bypass 9 days later.
Whoa, quadruple.
Quadruple.
Oof.
The four cabbage.
Mm.
But it turned out to be a blessing in disguise.
Well, sure.
Because I was married. So we had health insurance. I had just finished this run. I'm glad they found it.
Sure.
And I was able to recover and kind of get myself back together.
Good.
Once I did, 13 actually said, hey, we want you back. We loved you in the newsroom in whatever way we can get you. We don't have a reporter position, but would you come be an assignment editor or would you come be a producer?
Yeah.
And so the following late summer is when I did. I went back in the August of 2009.
Mm-hmm. Now, was Paul Conte there at the time? Were you working for Paul?
He had just left. Matter of fact, he was about to leave when I left 10, and I went down the hill to ask him, people should know that the stations are literally one's up the hill, one's down the hill.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And I went in just to get some advice from him. I didn't ask him for a job or anything. I just said, what do you think I should do?
Nice.
Because he'd been doing it for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah.
My wife, who is Kumi Tucker at Channel 13, she'll probably be upset that I said that. no, she won't.
Well, finally, you're mentioning somebody famous.
Yeah.
God, you know?
That's
mean,
right. Exactly. I haven't dropped a name in a long time.
Exactly.
But she said, but I certainly wasn't going to go in there and horn in on her area.
Sure.
But, it's funny. When I first moved here in 2000, you know, and you say my name fast, John Craig, people immediately think you say John Gray.
Oh, yeah.
Because one of the first stories...
Wait a minute. You're not John Gray?
Oh. Crap. I should leave.
I just spent a whole hour here talking, and you're not John Gray? I'm sorry. Had to do that.
I understand. Well, one of the first stories they sent me on Channel 10, matter of fact, I'll make it brief, is they sent me over to DeLillo's Hardware to do, you know, one of those, do you have enough shovels
for the snow, the storm that's coming?
And I show up and I said, yeah, hi, I'm John Craig here. And then she says, no, you're not. And I said, what are you talking about? What do you mean? She says, you're not. I said, I know I haven't been in the market very long, but I'm. She says, we thought you said John Gray.
So we're not going
to
talk to you.
Yeah. I said, so you're not going to talk to me? And the owner's like, no, I'll still talk to you. But so that's my real big connection with John Gray. And then ironically, he goes over to Channel 10.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm at 13. And
exactly. Crazy
years
stuff.
Later.
Yeah.
But so I go, yeah. So Conti was terrific. And then he was going over to take that job at St. Rose.
Yeah.
Where Chief built up a terrific school there.
Oh, absolutely.
For
yeah.
broadcasting.
Yeah.
But he gave me some good advice about, hey, if you were, he said, I never understood why we people hire people that are supposed to ask people in authority questions, hard questions, and question what's happening,
mm-hmm.
And then expect them to just roll over when they're told the same thing in their own company.
Yeah.
So when I gave pushback back at Channel 10 about why me?
Yeah.
You know, I produce more than, and you give push. He said, I have never understood that.
Sure.
And he was very good about just laid it right out there. And, you know, we've had a good cordial relationship ever since.
Sure.
But
he was my news director for a while at WGNA.
Oh, okay.
Before he went to TV.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Good.
Yeah. And wow. I think I've mentioned it on this podcast before. A few weeks after he went over to 13, I'm talking to him and I said, so what's it like over there? He says, well, it's nice to work at a place that has a budget. You know, he said, they got more money to buy a camera here than we'd have to equip a whole radio newsroom.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah. So he was very happy with the way money wise it turned out. Yeah.
Yeah. And people should know, I'll tell you all my salaries if you want to hear them. I mean, when I went to Fredericksburg, they paid me higher than they'd ever paid anybody before, $16,500.
There you go.
For a year. Woo. And luckily I had $8,000 saved from, you know, my birthdays in past, what grandmothers had sent me.
You're right.
So I had some money to live in low income housing. But $16,500. I go to RNN at $21,500.
Okay.
And then when they created these extra jobs and so on, I went up to a whopping 30, I believe.
There you go.
And then from 30, I went to Utica, made the 40, which was the 20 and the 20 is how they justified it.
Right.
And my father is going, what are you doing? You're going to get a real job here. Isn't it about time? I said, well, Dad, it's an affiliate now. Maybe I got something.
Yeah.
then I go to Michigan, and you're going to fall off your chair. When I reported, they hired me, it was a part-time job anyway, so I knew I only had like a six-month finite window that I either had to impress them or I was done. But when I reported, they paid me $7.40 an hour, and then I anchored the weekends, and they paid me $9.20 an hour.
God.
Yeah.
A TV station paying an hourly wage for on-air talent and journalism.
Yes, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
The only good thing about that was the 1 year that I was there, the 6 months I was there, Michigan State won the national championship in men's basketball. So I got to cover all the hoopla. Yeah. I didn't go to the game or any of that, but I got to cover all the hoopla in East Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
So I make that, and every dollar I made either went into rent, my gas tank, or my mouth to keep me
sustained.
Nothing
left over.
Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah.
Barely, yeah. And so then I left there, and then when Channel 10 hired me, my starting salary was back to 30.
Okay.
And then I built myself up from there.
Yeah.
But then I got to the point that I was making, gosh, somewhere in the neighborhood of a little over 40. And that's when they decided, well, you know what? We can split this up and hire two kids out of college for 22.
Yeah. Well, the stories you're telling and the numbers you're using, you just divide that in about half for the radio guys.
Yeah. I'm surprised. And I thought, you know, some of the top talent were making more than that.
Oh, sure. You know? No, my 17 years in full-time radio, I only got to about $17,000. Now, we're talking a little, you know, I'm a little older than you.
Yeah.
So we're talking when I left full-time radio was 86, okay?
Yeah.
But when I left the business and went into marketing and sales, I was making three times times that within a couple, three years. Yeah, it was
just crazy. I remember you, I've heard you say that on the podcast.
So sure. I mean, it was just nuts. And I, again, have to thank my wife for saying, you know, maybe there's something besides radio you could do full time.
Yeah. That's good. No, absolutely. So to get back, so I go back to 13 and I did everything I could to just, I didn't necessarily need to be on the air anymore.
So are you writing, producing? What are you doing?
I'm running the assignment desk on the weekends primarily.
Okay.
Which, you know, you're setting up the calls and you're setting up, making sure the reporters can go out in the stories. And some of these reporters, you know, that they can't, unless you spoon feed them, they're not doing much. So I would do that. And then I would come in and write 1 or 2 days a week. It was only part-time. It was 30 hours, up to 30 hours a week. And I don't remember what they paid me then, honestly, but again, I wasn't going to upset the apple cart. My wife was there. She was fine. Everything was good.
Yeah.
I was just happy to, and at the same time I said, I promised her I would keep looking for something out of the business, maybe something with the state.
Yeah.
Or in some other kind of private PR or something like that.
Sure.
I hopped on with a website, Capital Area Golf. I wound up being host of the bowling show, the, Huck Finn's Capital Region Bowling, I did for 8 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Joe Gallagher, is he here? Because he always wanted to be on that show.
Yeah.
So that I just did all those things, but I still stayed at 13, and then they wanted me on the air, and so I would go back and I'd report because I could do that.
Sure.
And we, at the time, I thought in that era, that framework, and again, I didn't grow up here, but for that time frame, 09 to the end of 10 and so on, I thought we had as good a rogues gallery of reporters and anchors as we've ever had.
I think so, too.
Cambrick had moved to evenings, and
I think
Lydia was there for a while before she went over to 10, but Benita was there, and Mark Mulholland had been there, and he left to go do some things with GE and so on, and then he came back, and he was covering the North Country. We had top notch. Bill Lambden was there.
Mm-hmm.
Top notch reporters all the way around.
Yeah,
and it was a good time to be there. I thought I had made it to the number one station in the market. You know, the top station in the capital of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, now I can go do. If I stay here, great. If it's time to do something else, that's okay too.
Wow,
it was in New York City.
Yeah,
but it was probably the best I was going to do for now.
Yeah, so. Now GY jumps in here somewhere. What's
comes
going
in the
on
beginning
there?
Of the end of the end of 2010.
Okay,
I get a phone call from Chuck Custer. We had run into each other. I was out doing an MOS man on the street story about something, and he couldn't be on because he worked for the competition. But he always said to me, "I always liked watching you. Keep in touch. There may be some changes." And he obviously knew as the news director that Don Weeks was, I guess, getting set to retire. He was getting set to take over the morning show, and things were changing to WGY. And he asked me to, and I applied. And the way the formatting was worked for then Clear Channel, they were going to downsize newsrooms around the region and do this kind of hub versus spoke.
Right.
Where you would do newscasts and send them out down the pike through the wonders of the computer and do morning news. And so I didn't count up how many stations it was, but it's probably about 12 other stations I was doing news for every morning.
Yeah.
So I was hired in January of 11 and was there doing mostly out of market things, you know, Worcester, Mass, Manchester, New Hampshire, even the Hudson Valley, Binghamton, Providence, Rhode Island, those kinds of places.
Right.
And you know, I didn't have the Boston accent, so I don't think I got Scituate right very well, very often. But
that would seem to me to be the biggest challenge. If you're in these, if you're doing news from these other markets and you don't live there, I mean, think of how many times you've heard of mispronunciations here of people that are reporting either from out of market or they've come here from outside the market.
Sure.
And it takes them, you know, months to learn, you know, Valencia and Glens Falls with an S, you know.
Or Scatico.
Exactly.
If you look at it the first time, even Cooksacky or Cooksack, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I screwed it up as in trying to be the local reporter, and oftentimes I would If I didn't know, I was never afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Well, but so too often they didn't.
That's just good journalism. That's just, you know, good training. Yeah.
We did some newscasts for a station in North Jersey, and it was so funny. They didn't assign it to me. So they gave it to somebody else in the newsroom.
Which town did he really mess up?
It was supposed to be North Haledon, and he said Haledon.
Oh, God.
And I didn't know he had done it, and he comes in, and then he was sitting at his desk, and he was pre-reading his copy to go back in sometime mid-morning, and I heard him say Haledon, and I was like, what?
What are you saying?
I said, can you, what? What was that? And he said it again, and I said, yeah, it's Haledon. It's Haledon and North Haledon.
Yeah.
And he said, oh. I said, you can ask me. Don't, you know, I'm not going to, I'd rather have it right, be right.
Exactly.
Then let's, because I'm sure I screwed up plenty of them over time.
Well, I had never been east of the Hudson River. And I go off to Boston to go to school.
Yeah.
And I'm on the college radio station.
Right.
And I'm reading some headline, and it's Worcester.
So
I finish the newscast, and the door opens, you know, swings wide open, and the news director pops his head in. Of course, he's only a year older than me, you know.
Right.
And he goes, Worcester! And he closes the door and walks back out. You know?
Yep.
But I didn't know, you know. What? Yeah.
I lucked out about that one because my brother went to Clark University in Worcester.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but yeah, the first few times, I'm like, where am I? I'm picking him up where? In Worcester? Where is this? What is this?
Yeah.
There were a few, for sure.
Yeah.
And there were more than a few. But I did that, and then that sort of spun into I would do some news updates for the River and PIX 106.
Sure.
And then I was able to, because of my golf connections, I was writing a column for the Troy Record, bowling and golf. So I got to do a little segment. I twisted Roger's arm on a 980 to put me on once a week or so on, and then I started taping some things there. And way back when, before a podcast are so prevalent now, I would tape these 10 little 10-minute vignettes, segments that he would run in their entirety.
Yeah, nice.
Cool. So had all these little operations, but again, knowing that, you know, this may be the end of the road, you never know, and we'll see where it takes us.
Yeah.
At the end of, we're somewhere in the spring of 16, TV came calling again, and I left iHeart, Clear Channel, whatever it is, and but in the meantime, that was the other thing. I had just done. I think that's what also helped get this radio job, is I knew that Don Weeks was retiring.
Yeah,
I think at the end of 10.
Yeah,
I pitched hard to do a story at Channel 13 about him. I said he's an iconic figure in this area.
Yep.
So I wound up writing a story for the Troy Record, and I did about a 2.5-minute piece. For Channel 13, that people were like, all right, well, I guess we'll air it in the 5. I said, you don't understand.
Yeah.
I said, first of all,
this man's icon.
I said, but I remember, I said, the way I pitched it was, when I was a kid, I always wanted to know what these people on the radio looked like, because you never knew what they looked like.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 1 week on Live at 5 at Channel 4 in New York, they did Radio Week, and they had your top people come in, and you wanted to tune in and see them because you never saw them.
Right,
that's the way it was in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And there was Imus, and there was Scott Muni from WNEW telling their stories. And I said, I don't know how many people know who A, what he looks like, but B, the stories he's told. He wakes you up every morning. He gets you to, he reads the school closings, all these things. And they said, all right, do the story. And then we'll put it somewhere in the 5:30.
Today is the 30th anniversary of a mainstay in the morning, Don Weeks on WGY Radio. And this Friday, Don will retire after a long, distinguished career in broadcasting. John Craig spent some time with him as he prepares to sign off for the last time.
All right, 8:49 in the morning right now. Here's Jessica Lamp, WGY All Day Traffic. Hey, Jess.
He's been the Capital Region's wake-up call.
Don Weeks and the WGY Morning News got your day started for 30 years. From interviews to breaking news to corny bits, he's always blended his personality into the events of the time.
Catch him while you can, because this Friday he'll be gone. That's right. Oh, hey, look, the poet didn't know it. How about that?
A very pleasant good evening to all of you.
One of his first jobs was a weatherman here on Channel 13. He even did bits then, including a tally called God versus the National Weather Service. The government sent him a cease and desist letter.
I showed the audience the National Weather Service's weather balloon that they used to forecast the weekend forecast. And it was this huge Mickey Mouse balloon. This huge had a Mickey Mouse that they had in the attic over at Channel 13 for some reason. And we got in more trouble.
Born in Albany and raised in Schenectady, Weeks turned down other markets, working in advertising for other stations, and at his wife Sue's urging, took the seat as WGY's morning man on December 1st, 1980. In 2005, he won the prestigious Radio Marconi Award, and last year was inducted in the New York State Broadcasters Hall of Fame. He still has bits on cassette he's been sharing with listeners, and received lots of fan mail as he retires. Favorite interview?
I think, actually, I don't know. I can't tell you. It's almost, and it's the oldest cliche. It's like, who's your favorite kid?
Don is actually retiring a few weeks earlier than expected at the request of his doctor. He has Wegener's granulomatosis, a rare blood disorder, but he says he's already improving. He's looking forward to sleeping in and listening to his successors, longtime sidekick Chuck Custer, and former News Channel 13 anchor and reporter Kelly Lynch.
To have had the privilege of, you know, going into so many people's homes every morning and being welcomed so warmly. I mean, it's people consider you a friend. And to have come from those streets to this and talk to royalty, talk to presidents, talk to some of the biggest stars of the last 30 years. I mean, you talk about an impossible dream. I mean, God has been very good to that kid.
John Craig, News Channel 13.
Everybody watched it in my newsroom, and they all said we were wrong, and that was a great story.
Nice.
And you know, it's never really the reporter. I mean, yes, you have to be able to put a sentence together, but if you don't have a good subject, you don't have anything.
Yeah,
and obviously Don was terrific.
Easy subject, yeah.
Yeah, and he was great.
Such a great guy.
Yeah.
So, and right around then, now I was obviously working weekends at TRY at the time, and I would drop in on Gallagher.
Right.
And so I got to know you there.
Yep.
Because you're doing, you know, news for Joe on Saturday.
Because that's what they said, they said, you know, you have to work Monday to Friday, but every third weekend, you have to work both Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
Whatever. Yeah.
For the same money. Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah.
Well, we got a chance to meet, and then and enjoyed our time together. How brief it was.
Yes.
But then 2019 comes around, and it's the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I get a call from you saying, "Yeah, you're over at 13 at the time," and you said, "We're doing a story. Can I come talk to you about?" Yeah. About your memories of that night, because I had just started in radio at the time. I was 16 years old, actually, 5 days after the landing, I turned 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had a fun a few minutes.
Sat out on your beautiful veranda.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you brought an actual cameraman, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's right.
You know, and we sat and talked for a little bit.
Well, and I'm old enough to, I like to tell people that I am old enough. I did see the moon landing.
How old? Were you at
the
time?
I was sitting on my mother's knee. I was about 6-7 months old at the time. Because I was born in October of 68. And
wow.
The moon landing was, you know, the July following summer 69. Of 69. That's right. But it's funny. There's a... my mother bought that year, every year we'd get a Christmas ornament. So that year, there was a special ornament of an astronaut that she bought. It wasn't, you know, these commemorative, it was just a cute glass ornament that she hung on the tree every year. And sure enough, in my drunken stupor, when had all my buddies over in college, and I happened to stand under the mistletoe, my buddy comes over to give me a big kiss, and we fell into the tree.
Oh, no.
And the only thing that survived, and we fell on that ornament. But the head survived. The helmet... survived. And to this day, I have it.
Oh, no.
And I still hang it. My mother used to hang it back on the tree until she passed away. And then it was bequeathed to me. And it still hangs on my tree every year. Oh, so that wow. helmet is there. And it reminds me every year that, yes, I saw the moon landing.
Wow.
That's a whole other story you can edit out later. But no, yeah, okay. No, it was great. It was so, so great that you were able to share those memories. Because it was another example, by the way, of television hadn't planned ahead. Yeah. And I thought, what are you doing?
It's the 50th anniversary. I said, Come on.
Let's do the. And then that. I interview you, and I go up to RPI and find out that one of the top teachers, deans up there had worked on it.
Yeah.
And you just start going down these rabbit holes.
Yeah.
That, but if you don't do it, and if you don't do the legwork, nobody else is going to do it for
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're finally smartening up and deciding that maybe broadcasting isn't the end all and be all, which I learned a lot earlier than you did.
Yeah. After about 30 years, I figured it out. Yeah.
So when did it all culminate in you moving on to state pastures?
Yes. I get a phone call from a friend of mine who knew somebody that was at one of the state agencies saying, hey, they were looking for somebody in public information. And if you're interested, send your resume. And this is great because I didn't have to send him a tape or I didn't have to send him an audio tape or I didn't have to send him a DVD. Right. I could just send him my resume, my 2-page resume. So I do. And this was the, June of 19.
Okay.
And the state doesn't move very fast. so it kind of drags along. And by the end of the summer, late summer, it looked like I was going to get hired by the state of New York in one of the public information for Children and Family Services. So around Labor Day, but again, I forgot how things, I didn't know how things worked in the state. Labor Day becomes Columbus Day. Columbus Day becomes Halloween. And finally, around there, I get a phone call saying, okay, you're hired. It finally went through. When can you start? And I said, well, I got to give at least 2 weeks notice.
Sure.
I'm still working at 13, even though I didn't have a contract.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, well, we hire people on a Thursday. So how about November 23rd, 4th, whatever. I said, isn't that Thanksgiving
day? Week or day? Yeah.
Yeah. And they said, yeah, it is. I said, but because nobody works on that day, and I can work discretion, we just really want to get you in here, but I can be discretionary on this. We'll say that's your starting day, and it'll really be, you can come the next day, but there won't be anybody here, so I'll worry about that there. And so you can start on the following Monday.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And that Sunday night, it was a huge snowstorm, and they closed all this non-essential state. So I didn't start work till a Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
But I hope they don't dock my pay. But my last day on the air was Thanksgiving morning of 19,
mm-hmm.
and which was technically my first day at the state. I do the Equinox thing down at the Capitol.
The line is long, yet no one seems to mind.
The camaraderie and the hope.
Hey, you got to be festive if you're going to celebrate.
Last year we went to a place and this lady gave us all scarves because she is so thankful that we brought her.
They told me how much fun it was to wake up at 2:30 in the morning and drive for a half hour and hand out food and wait in line. So it's fun. It's an event. We camp out and yeah, it's fun giving back.
He drove from Connecticut to join his cousin, Jonathan DeShalis, a high school junior, to deliver Equinox meals on Thanksgiving.
Every year, it's always, they always show really good reaction. They're always really happy when we bring them the food.
It was kind of a dedication, a tribute to my dad and what my parents had instilled in us of giving back to the community.
A few spots over, a teenager from Syracuse came to visit her aunt in Furubush for the holiday.
I love that she was inspired by hearing the stories of the people that we delivered the food to. And this, waiting.
And this family from Gilderland is one with Uno. 9-year-old Nico even made his own energy drink.
Is there a secret ingredient in that energy drink?
Sugar.
And that's the end of it. I sign off, and I started the following week at the state. I worked at the one that agency for about two and a half years, and now I work for New York State Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation.
Yeah.
And this is our centennial celebration this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the governor at the time, back in 1924, created a agency that oversaw all this. Some of the parks are older, like Niagara Falls.
Sure.
Much older. But this is the year, 2024, that 100 years ago is when they started Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation. And I'm working for public affairs there, so it's great.
That's very good. Yeah. Very good. We can't let this end without you at least mentioning your daughter, just in case someday she listens to this and wants to know, Mommy, what did Daddy do?
My daughter is Julia. And she is terrific. We have just the one.
Yeah.
But she's 12. I love her so much, and I'm coaching her basketball team.
Cool.
And but she gets all her brains from her mother, who went to Princeton, not from her father, who was a vagabond at all these stations for all this time. But no, and she's smart. I see your Piano for Dummies book back there behind you. I may need that because we do have a keyboard, but she can sit down and play it like nobody's business.
Wow.
She's into art, and she loves to public speak. Go figure.
Where'd she get that?
She has no choice. Playing clarinet now. Had gone to private school for a long time and is now in the public school system, makes great friends. She's
nice.
So yeah. I could go on and on and brag about her. But yeah.
I hope she gets past chapter four, which is twice it has stopped me. I never, my wife got me this great keyboard years ago and bought that book with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, twice I tried to get past chapter four where you have to start learning how to read music. No. Because see, that deals with, if you ask anybody that's in music, it deals with math sort of mm-hmm. things. And hey, I never got through math class without help.
Her grandparents, my in-laws, got her a keyboard several years ago now, and she took to it. I think that's
made
wonders. She can still sit down and do it and play some tunes. It's transitioned to her now doing the clarinet. So many other things.
She's making
bracelets. I mean, she's probably going to sell you a bracelet.
We have a niece that we gave the keyboard to.
Okay.
And I'm not going to take all the credit, but she's studying music composition and education at Ithaca State now.
Well, good for you.
It's because I gave her my keyboard.
Absolutely. Congratulations. Good for her.
John, this has been terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For sitting and doing this. And I know you're just over, some flu-like symptoms from last week.
Yeah,
and,
you get the flu shot and then they get the wrong strain. But we've all battled, of course, all these health issues we've had the last few years, one form or another.
Yeah.
But, it knocked me out last week for sure. But the great thing is I worked for a place that they didn't say, you still have to come. Honestly, when I did morning news, then that's the last few
you
things
could
I
be
did.
On death's door.
Yeah, but who was going
to
come in and fill?
Yeah,
if you didn't feel good at 7:30 or 8 o'clock p.m.,
sure.
You're not going to get somebody at 2:30 or 3 in the morning.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah.
But that was, and that's the one thing. One of the other reasons I left and even entertained it was the last 3 years I loved it. Doing the morning show was fine. You never knew where you were going to be, all that. But getting up at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I did it for radio, getting up and being in there by 3:30 in the morning.
Sure, sure.
It just wears on you to a point that you go, that's enough.
Yeah.
And it's time to do something else. And
The people that complain about 9 to 5 have never worked the 2:30 to noon.
That is for sure. Yeah. And when you say, I learned now at the state, you can say, hey, have a nice weekend. Because you can do that.
Yeah.
But when you're in a newsroom, I never said it because I knew somebody was not going to, because their weekend was not when their weekend was.
Exactly.
And that's just the nature of the beast.
That's true.
If you complain too much about it, maybe the business isn't for you.
Exactly. So. Well, it sounds like you've had some fun along the way and are where you're supposed to be right now. You get to spend some time with your daughter.
Because my wife still works weekends. So my daughter and I get to spend a lot of time together, especially on the weekends, and either playing with the dog or just going out and exploring
cool.
Wherever we can go. Have you started recording, by the way?
Did I turn it on? I'm about to turn it off.
No, but we've had a lot of fun so far. It's just the three of us and our little nuclear family.
That's terrific.
But we're able to have some vacations now. Again, yes. Things you didn't have when, you know, you're working these crazy
That's
businesses.
That's true, too. That's true, so. Too. Well, best of luck going forward. And, you know, just a joy sitting here talking with you. Thanks for sharing.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Warren. I really appreciate it. And it's been a pleasure to get to know you. And, yes, anytime you came in on those weekends, it was always great to be able to play off of you, but you had great stories. I learned a lot just about the business itself. And you had that extra, you know, the pizzazz, and you had you had those ideas and advice that, you know, I could look at and go, hey, maybe I can get back into this if I really want to, but at the same time, I can make a good career out of something else too.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Nice talking. But
thank you so much.
Take care, John.
Radio Split Ranch.
You know, I knew I liked this guy from the moment we met, but to learn he rubbed shoulders and worked with some of my all-time favorite communicators, just icing on the cake. Thanks for sharing, John. After our conversation, John was nice enough to tally up the call letters, both radio and TV, that he's either volunteered or worked at in his colorful career. They total 10, including his 10-watt high school radio station. He helps bring our running total of call letter mentions on this podcast to 298 over 29 interviews. And we're going to end this month's edition appropriately with an air check from one of John's stops. We alluded to the fun he and I had when we worked together at the iHeart Cluster in Albany and would spend a few minutes live in the studio with longtime WGY personality and radio legend Joe Gallagher. Here are the three of us from April 25th, 2015, as usual, talking about a lot of nothing, but having a ball doing it. Enjoy, and please join us again next week at the Radio Split Ranch. Invite a friend along. Until then, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened.
Corporation will match it with another $55,000. I'm Michael Barr, Bloomberg Radio.
Whereas he arrives each weekend morning prior to 6 a.m. to prepare his show. Whereas he gets the pre-show jitters and is known as Derek Jitters. Whereas he proclaims to have his show prepped. Whereas, when asked where is his show prep, he replies,
whereas, who is you to whereas me?
Whereas, it is now resolved that this is Joe Gallagher.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I love those.
What is that show prep of which you speak? What is that?
That's what we wear at. Whereas he prepares his show prep in where at where in.
Isn't that redundant? Preparing your show prep.
Wait, huh?
Preparing your show prep.
Oh, preparing
the show preparation. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, right. Whereas, where did you come from? How about where did you come from? Where
Schenectady.
You ever sat through a resolution? We were talking about it last Sunday. You ever sat through a resolution? You know, when they're like, whereas.
Yeah, where, yeah, I have. Yeah. And you're saying, get to the point. Would you?
Jump kick that stuff out of here. Do some work in the assembly or legislature. Get some work done.
Now, you wouldn't be saying that if they declared a Joe Gallagher day.
I wouldn't want a whereas.
But that's how they do it.
Huh?
Yeah, that's how they do it. If you want a Joe Gallagher day, you're going to have to, you know, go through the whereases.
I don't want a whereas. I don't give me no whereas. I want to hear about no whereas. Okay. I just want to get to the dessert. And that's usually what it does. It's between the dinner and the dessert.
Exactly.
Well, I don't want to hear about no whereas. Okay. So anyway, by the way, you work at our sister. You are Chris Warren.
At last I checked.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't recognize you. Anyway, Chris, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you.
Beautiful day today.
Didn't recognize him? I borrow my glasses.
I didn't even see you in there. Because
because you're wearing my
glasses.
I said earlier we could switch glasses if you really want to check them out. Here, I'll come over right now.
No, John. That is bad. I'm not going to do that. I learned as a little boy,
what?
Don't be putting on people's glasses. No, what, don't make me do that. Because, get away from me. Come get a little wrecked. No, I don't want to put those on. No.
It's good show prep
it's
radio.
It's bad for your eyes. My mommy
And
where are you, Joe?
Get out! Don't hit me on the. He's hitting me on the head now.
Put the glasses back on.
He hit me
John.
On the head. Luckily,
you wouldn't try other people's glasses on.
Come here.
Your mother told you not to try other people's glasses.
Don't be putting other people's glasses on because if their prescription is stronger than yours, it could impact you. That's what I heard.
Not for a second or two. Jeez.
That one you just wear them for a few moments.
Oh, so now you're telling me my mom was wrong. Well, yes,
just like you can go swimming after you eat and, you know, too much TV is not bad. Well, maybe that one's
that might have been right, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe it wasn't my mom who told me. It was somebody, and I...
Radio bit. He can't even go along a couple of seconds.
Might have been our local city council member.
I think you'd see as well out of these as I see without them. Which is not very good.
I would gather that
24,000 vision. That's what I have.
24,000.
Yeah, something like that.
Chris,
just stop measuring.
Chris, he had glasses, but he got rid of his. Now he doesn't wear them anymore either.
That's right.
What about mine?
No, that's fine. I just need the $5 cheaters from the grocery. You know,
good
the
for you.
Store.
Did you get LASIK?
I'm fine. No, I had cataract surgery, and they put lenses in when they took the cataracts
out. There you
out,
go.
And now I don't need glasses.
What do you mean lenses?
Distance. They put magnified lens. They put my prescription in.
This has been Ophthalmology Corner.
So they're there forever?
Well, until they have to play with the cataracts again, which can happen, I guess, more than once in your life, depending on how long you live.
Oh.
Yeah.
John, you could avoid looking like you do now if you...
All you need to do is get cataracts.
Yeah. My brother had LASIK surgery. Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I've not had it yet.
No.
Well,
I got the... Never mind.
No, I just...
It's
I
not
asked
worth it.
John earlier today if his wife was aware that he had glass because he wore contacts.
Yes, he hardly ever wore glasses. Did you take your lenses out at night and
every
put
night.
Glasses on? Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I did
well,
that.
That's nobody's
for
business
years, yeah.
but his and his wife's. He takes his lenses in or out. That's rude, Chris. Sorry, John. I
so she, if she sees you after dark, she knows that you also
yes,
wear glasses.
That's right.
If she sees you in the Santa
and luckily,
closet.
She woke me up this morning because I would have been scrambling to get in here.
Wait a minute, your wife woke you up this
morning?
Well,
she came in. It was 3:40 this morning, and she said, "You know, you have to." And I said, "Yeah, I got the alarm set for 4." So,
don't you hate it when that
you
happens?
Don't get an elbow?
20
I get like
minutes
an
you
elbow.
Missed out. You never get those 20 minutes back.
No, you don't. I laid there and just bothered to get up.
And I feel bad for Chuck and Kelly because I wake up every morning. Our alarm goes off first thing, and I have to say things to them as I hit the snooze. And I want to apologize both to Chuck and Kelly right now for that. I mean, there's nothing against you personally. It's just the idea that. And then I do it the second time. We hit the snooze twice.
You wonder how many people are doing that, though,
it's a
really.
Chuck and Kelly. Yeah.
Those poor guys. They must get tired of that, yeah.
Today, we were talking about Chuck and Kelly, and the fact is that our weekend meteorologist, Bill Dagger, provides us good weather.
Mm-hmm.
And I said yesterday we had terrible weather. How could Chuck and Kelly should have been embarrassed that we had that kind of weather yesterday? Because their job is to draw the good weather out of the meteorologist like we do on the weekend.
Okay.
And we could have bad weather right now, but you know what I do? I draw the good weather out of Bill Dagger.
Wow.
Nice.
But Chuck and Kelly, for some reason, and they should be embarrassed over what happened yesterday, and they owe an apology. To the capital region.
I couldn't see the good weather. I didn't have my glasses on.
So, Chris, what's new with you?
I don't know, 30 bags of lawn rakings last weekend. 30 bags. I counted them. That's
30
bags?
That's
how anal I am.
Okay.
That was a long weekend last weekend. Yeah. But I don't have to. I'm done now till the fall. So, I mean, that's cool.
Well, let's switch to John. John, have you done any bags of lawn?
Under my eyes. Thank you.
Do you do any raking at your house?
No, I rent.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you know, it's almost worth
everybody wants to buy a home.
I still get out there and rake a little bit. And actually, my daughter now, we did it in the wintertime. We shoveled, so we got our own little shovel.
Yeah.
So I'll have to get her own little rake, and maybe we'll get out there and clean up a little bit.
Right.
But luckily, my landlord comes by with he and a couple of guys once a spring and does some spring cleaning.
Yeah. My granddaughter got out there with a little rake. There was a little mini rake we got her last
year.
That's
fun.
Yeah, it lasted about 5 minutes. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Right. All right, Daddy, I'm done with this.
Yeah,
my younger son, Morty, he had a little lawnmower. He used to go around, follow me around with a lawnmower. And now that he's older, I want him to get to use the lawnmower at all. I can't get him even near the lawnmower.
Yeah, my son's, that phase lasted about, one summer.
Right.
Where each of them got to the age where they could do it. And I said, and I'll pay you. And it lasted about a summer. Then they went off and got regular summer jobs the next year. And
sure.
I was back at it again.
Paid better.
In the days,
yeah.
True. Parents, they made us, we were, I think our kids have it easier today because
you know, but back then my dad wanted me to mow the lawn. I mowed the lawn. Now it's, you know, I mean, it's we're easier. You don't want to mow? Okay, you don't have to mow the lawn.
Oh, yeah? That's the way you brought your kids up?
Huh? Well, yeah, they're bigger than I am now.
Well, that's true. They do get to that point.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. But now Jamie Roberts works at your what station?
Yes,
are you
Oldies 98.3 mornings. Yeah, she's on every morning, Monday through Friday, and Saturday afternoons.
You're just bad. You're bad at John Craig. I heard
John give the time and date of his.
I asked for a brief summary.
You mean Huck Finn's Capital Region Bowling with only a couple weeks to go, 10 a.m. on My4 Albany tomorrow and next Sunday?
Did you see Modern Family this week?
No.
It took place in a bowling alley. It was a lot of fun. Oh, and it made me want to get back out there and bowl.
See, there you go. He wants to quit. You know, he shouldn't quit.
I have. I've retired from forever from bowling.
Really?
My mother-in-law beat me. at a game, and I said, that's it. And I wanted to let the bowling ball fly, the bowling shoes. My wife said, hang on to everything. Talk to John Craig. He'll talk you down.
That's right.
John is a bowling host, she said. He's a co-host of a bowling show, and John can probably talk you back into it.
You probably could.
I haven't bowled in 4 weeks.
That's unfortunate. I think you can do it. Why? Because I haven't been in? You could have called me. You could have emailed me.
I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago in the hallway. Do you remember that?
Yes.
You blew it off.
No, I did not blow it off. Care. You said I'd wait for your therapy when are you back in on the news. I think you were deliberately delaying bowling. You didn't really want to do it.
I do like to bowl. Well, I did. I don't anymore after my mother-in-law beat me.
You need to practice.
My mother-in-law got 44.
That can be,
maybe
yeah,
you need my
that
glasses.
Can be humiliating.
Maybe you can see the pins better with my glasses.
Oh, I bet you can see them, yeah. I bet you can see.
The ones over at Spare Time Latham right now? Yes, I can.
You can see.
There's a misrack on lane 26.
Hey, remember those glasses they used to advertise where you could see through walls?
Yes.
Did they ever work,
X-ray glasses? No, Joe.
My mom wouldn't buy me some. They were. You could go look through clothes too. Supposedly.
Supposedly, yeah. That's how they advertised it.
That's right.
In the back of the
did not get a pair.
Magazines. Yeah.
You bought them?
No, I did not.
John, you bought them?
No, I wanted them.
Come on.
But you know, I had to be. I was like, I was 13.
Well, how do you know, Chris? They don't work.
Well, he's got you there.
Yeah. Well, I suppose since I've never tried them, I suppose they could work, Joe.
And you asked your mom to buy you a see-through so you could see through clothes?
No, I didn't tell her that part. She said I could help her. If I saw her in the kitchen, I could see through the wall. Didn't work out that way.
Hello, Mary. How are you? Well, John, you've got weird glasses on there. Oh, my eyes are not that good, Mary. And then, I personally used to see the ad in the magazines, but I never sent away for them.
Right. Me too. What?
Oh, no, never mind. Anyhow, so here we have a sunny day. We're going to enjoy being finally getting in. Last week was very nice, too, though.
Actually, it was.
It was a beautiful weekend.
You know what was really weird, though? And the forecast was dead on. Last Saturday, they said it would be nice and warm and sunny, and somewhere early afternoon, the wind would pick up.
Right.
Well, of course, it picked up while we had a few piles of leaves raked together. And I swear, that wind came through, and the first gust was like 50 miles an hour. And everything we had that we hadn't put in bags yet just went all back on the lawn.
You probably said to those leaves what I say to Chuck and Kelly when I hit the snooze button.
Yeah, it was along those lines, yeah. Actually, you heard the whole neighborhood groaned. Everybody that was out, you heard everybody yell.
I know. That's annoying. That is very, very, very bad.
It was crazy.
I know I had something I wanted to...
It's probably time for me to go, Joe.
That might be, but the thing I wanted to... by the way, the Yankees broke the Mets' 11-game win streak.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
I'm a Yankees fan, but I wanted to root for the underdog.
Yeah, right, the Mets, I mean, they deserve some good news. They're having a great start to their season.
They're good this year. They're great.
Yeah. As are the Red Sox, you know, they're right up there with everybody else.
Yeah, and... I'd ask John if he saw the game, but he didn't have his contacts in. So. All right. Well, anyway, Chris, you will be on tomorrow?
Yeah, right at a little after 12 noon when Casey Kasem's done with his countdown on Oldies 98.3.
All right. And as I said, your cohort, Jamie and I, will be at in Albany at the Children's Hospital this coming Thursday and Friday morning, 10 to noon. Chuck and Kelly, 5:30 to 10. It's all for the... The kid children, you know, the Kid Cares Radiothon we do every year. Yeah, it's really, really
Jamie
nice.
Jamie loves doing that. It's a great thing.
Oh, it is. And, it's the benefit of the Bernard and Millie Duker Children's Hospital at Albany Med. And we hope that you'll be just as generous as you've always been. Again, Friday
Thursday and Friday, Chuck and Kelly, 5:30 to 10, then Jamie and I from 10 to noon at the cafeteria. And our sister station, The River, also very involved.
Cafeteria?
At the...
Are we going to hear you on the air at all if you're doing it from the cafeteria, Joe?
I'll be there. Don't worry. And I won't be eating anything at all.
Okay.
But it's always a great thing to do that. And it's being presented by Keeler Motor Car Company, Price Chopper, and Fryhoffers.
Terrific.
Well, Chris, it's good to see you again.
Always fun to be here, Joe. I enjoy this.
Yeah, and nice to see you without glasses. You don't need them.
That's true.
Okay, and John Craig mentioned earlier that I have glasses, but we don't. Mm-hmm. There's no need to mention that on the air. Yeah. It's nobody's business.
Right.
Okay.
As long as I have Andrew show me the door, I'm fine.
Yeah. All right, it's over there to the left.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you, Chris. It's 850 WGY. Good morning.
The dependable weather info.